You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Anna Revskaya was once a prima ballerina of the Bolshoi Ballet, commonly referred to as the butterfly in her native Russia, before she defected to the West during the Cold War. Madame Revskaya and her life in Boston's Back Bay and in Moscow are at the heart of Daphne Kalate's debut novel, called Russian Winter, and like any good protagonist, the ballerina has a few secrets that she's carried into her advanced age. Daphne Kalate's book is published by Harper, and I'm very pleased that it has brought her to our show today. Welcome.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is your first novel, although you've published short stories. It's been getting wonderful reviews and has a near solid 5-star rating on Amazon. I hope that isn't all your friends writing in, but that's fabulous.
It's been great. It's wonderful to hear back from readers.
Did this begin as a story?
It did. It did, actually, about 10 years ago. And there was even a point where it could have been in my first short story collection, and I pulled it because I realized, no, it needs to be a novel.
Because you fell in love with this character?
No, actually. I think at that point I was still a little bit cowed by the thought of actually staying with that character for a long time. But I wanted to do justice to the backstory that I had in mind. The plot also had become so complicated in the story. It had too many elements. There's also, there's the jewelry auction, there's the ballet, there's Russia, and there's Boston. So,
and how did it work out? Did it start with the character and then the jewelry come in? Or were you thinking about writing something about jewelry in an auction?
I was not thinking about jewelry in an auction at all. I also really wasn't thinking about ballet or Russia. The truth is I was thinking about Russian literature. And the story was about a student and the winter in Boston that she was studying Russian literature, which is why the title even of that story was Russian Winter. And then when I realized how compelling this ballet figure was, who in the story, the student was just helping pack up her apartment. She was an elderly former ballerina. That was when I started to sort of discover who that woman was and that she was sort of based on my own grandmother, who did live in Soviet Hungary, and that sort of had influenced who she became.
But she wasn't a ballerina.
She was not at all. And I should just say that I'm a great fan of dance. My mother taught dance, and I took dance classes, and I still love dance. But it's not that I thought I knew a lot about it. It was only after I started writing the book that I thought, wow, ballet is really appropriate for this subject because it's sort of an authoritarian art form in that ballerinas really have to stay in line. It's all about conformity. So I thought that worked well.
Although it is interesting that any number of the dancers who defected, and I've interviewed a few of them, all said it was because they wanted to get away from the rigidity of the Soviet system. They wanted to try their hands at other things. Baryshnikov went so far as to not only dance ballets with music that would not have been allowed in the Soviet Union, but then he danced with modern dance groups and he did all sorts of other things. Your ballerina saying that she didn't leave to escape communism or that.
No, you know, and the fact is there are, you could also find ballerinas who want to actually stay with the classic ballets and you have somebody, you know, or even in America like Gelsey Kirkland who was with Balanchine's company but wanted to go and dance these classic Russian ballets with story ballets. So it goes both ways.
And Nureyev defected, and he never wanted to do anything but the classic ballet.
That's right.
Well, so we have Nina Revskaya based on your grandmother in some ways. Did your grandmother defect?
Yes, and my father and other relatives. At the same time, a lot of my family stayed there. And it was only when I went back in the 80s and saw how that part of my family was living that I started to kind of put the two halves together and see how some of the qualities in, for instance, my father and my grandfather that I thought were more personality were also sort of part, it was situational.
You live in Boston, and this story is set in Boston. Is there a large Russian emigre population there?
There is, and in fact, I live in Brookline, which is very Russian. My neighbors have always been Russian. You walk down the street, I've actually had people just speak to me in Russian on the street, just assuming that I would understand. So it's funny because I live in that situation.
Funny, you don't look Slavic.
Well, you know, I I even in the library, there are all these Russian books, but the truth is that's not part of my community. It's not something I understand. As much as I studied Russian history and cultural and social history.
Now, Nina is somebody who was very social and worked in dance companies. Mm-hmm. Now she lives alone.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay with her?
You know, I try to portray her as someone who likes solitude for a couple of reasons. Not only kind of luxuriating in the privacy that she never had growing up as a child in a communal society, but also it's a way to protect yourself if you do have secrets that you're harboring. And I think she doesn't want people to discover her past and what she's ashamed of.
Well, we can't reveal a lot of those things ourselves. Spoilers are a real problem when you're having this kind of conversation.
That's right.
But how old was she, would somebody like mm-hmm. Nina have been when she would have started taking dance lessons and been discovered as somebody who might be Bolshoi material?
You would usually start at about 9 or 10. And in the period that I'm writing about, this would have been the late mid to late 1930s, the real kind of craze of interest in ballet hadn't quite started. So it wasn't quite as competitive. But, you know, you would have had to have natural sort of inclination.
At that time, the Russian ballet was considered the ideal, the best,
mm-hmm.
Even though ballet didn't start in Russia.
That's right.
Each chapter begins with items that are up for auction. When did you realize that that was going to be the structure of this novel?
You know, pretty late into the project. I still actually remember when that happened. I was actually lying on my bed just in a moment of, what am I going to do with this book? It just felt so unwieldy, and it didn't really have the structure yet.
Was this partly because you were very adept at short stories, but learning how to write a novel is a
yes,
whole other problem?
Definitely. I mean, I was learning how to write a novel until I finished writing this thing. And, you know, I'll learn to write a novel all over again on my next one. But that I still remember it was 2007 when I actually had the idea of the auction and that it could be structured with these specific jewels entering at the beginning of every
each
chapter.
Serving as a kind of a Madeleine. Because
yes,
they bring back a different kind of a memory of from her past.
Exactly. And I thought it would be interesting to first see sort of the clinical details of the piece, the way it would be listed in an auction catalog, and try to envision what it would look like and then hear from her point of view what that meant symbolically to her.
There's a character named Grigory Solodin. He purchases a copy of a magazine that had featured Nina Revskaya's jewels and from the past, and now mm-hmm. they're available on eBay?
That's right. Well, I think it's not the jewels. I think it's the, if I'm remembering correctly, it's this magazine, I think, that he finds. But
Hello Magazine.
Yes, yes, that's right. And I wanted him to have some sort of connection to this woman and that it's only through some objects that he can really try and prove it. So I thought jewelry was sort of mysterious, and in this case it's amber, which I think of as particularly Russian.
The book alternates between Nina's present in Boston's Back Bay and her Soviet past. When you wrote about Nina's childhood in Moscow, which was during the Stalin era,
mm-hmm.
How much research did you have to do?
A lot. You know, I'd never studied the history of Russia, and I felt like I really needed to have a solid background. So I read a lot of social and cultural histories mostly and a lot more literature, which I'd also read. That helped.
There was always a problem between art and politics in the Soviet Union under Stalin.
Mm-hmm.
Writers suddenly found themselves in the gulag.
Mm-hmm.
Composers had to change their styles. Did it have an impact on the dancers as well?
Yes, although I think, you know, they're more instruments of the choreographers. And I think that, you know, that's an interesting question, is it? You know, in most cases.
Because in China, for example, mm-hmm. ballet suddenly became a revolutionary art form when Madame Mao took over the mm-hmm. The arts.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you had the Red Brigade. Mm-hmm. Red Brigade, I think, is the famous one there. And there's, you know, I think it's called Red Poppy is the classic one in Russian ballet. These are very similar sort of propagandistic stories. But, you know, I think most what you see with a lot of these dancers, they just want to dance. So they will do what they can. And I saw a great quote from Shirley MacLaine where she said, dancers are artistic soldiers. And I think that's a way of looking at the dancers. She said that because they'll do what they're told is what she said.
And that's why some of them become choreographers and others never imagine doing that.
Right. They just want to move.
Nina says to one of the characters, Drew Brooks, people think I fled Russia to escape communism. Really, I was escaping my mother-in-law.
You know, I stole that line from my grandmother. her situation in Soviet-occupied Hungary was, you know, suddenly there were fewer places to live and families having to live communally. And she was moving in with her second husband and the mother-in-law was there. And she actually, what I've heard about that mother-in-law has become a character in my book of the older woman who cannot mentally even understand the idea that everything's been equalized and that she's not an upper-class person anymore.
But somebody like Nina was a star, would have found it very difficult to give all of the trappings of stardom, wouldn't she?
That's a good point. But, you know, I think I wanted to show her desperation at the end, and it is a desperate act.
So when she comes to America, can she just pick up where she left off?
No, I mean, she doesn't. She really kind of reinvents her life at that point. And I think she wants, in a way, she doesn't even want to be in the spotlight as much as she is at that point.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people who left the Soviet Union in the later years have told me that when they came here imagining the United States to be heaven, they found a country with its own problems and they weren't so sure that they didn't want to go back, and some did go back.
Well, that in itself is brave because I know there's also a lot of fear of going back when you've escaped.
Well, under Stalin, it would have been different than it would have been under Gorbachev.
Well, that's a good point. That much later.
So what are you doing now? Are you back to writing short stories? Are you going to work on another novel?
I've been working on another novel. And we'll see if it actually becomes a real novel.
Is it going to take as long as this one?
I sure hope not.
Meanwhile, congratulations on the wonderful response that this novel has received. And I look forward to the next one. This one is called Russian Winter. And it is published by Harper's. And my great thanks to Daphne Kalote for being Kalotay.
Yeah, you have it right, Kalote.
Thank you for being on our show.
Thanks so much.